and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. We may never know to what degree Joe Biden's obvious mental deficiencies have played in recent American foreign policy decisions, particularly when it comes to Palestine. But it is fair to ask if Biden's dementia is leading us all into a global conflict. Crosstalking Dementia and Wars, I'm joined by my guest Lionel in New York. He is a legal and media analyst. In Jersey City, we have Sarah Flounder. She is co-director of the International Action Center. And here in Moscow, we have Julia Kasem. She is a Lebanese political analyst. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Sarah, let me go to you first in Jersey City. So much is going on. I mean, in the last news cycle, we have IDF generals saying that they want a ceasefire. Now, I do not believe that's for humanitarian reasons. They're most likely eyeing Lebanon, which we will talk about. We obviously have the spectacle that Joe Biden presented the entire world, which puts in doubt any kind of decision-making process coming out of the United States. There are multiple conflicts in the world. And most importantly, and sadly, is that there is no push to end the genocide in Gaza. And I'd like to throw in, too, the largest land grab in the West Bank in the last 30 years. Everything is going in the wrong direction, even though everyone is throwing their arms up in the air and saying, what can we do? Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, what's really demented is the policy, and it is criminal beyond belief, out of touch with reality. And this is true from both Biden and Trump. You hear that debate, there's no discussion of what they said, what they stand for. The only discussion was of the ability to succeed in a, you know, just a camera shot. Who can convince voters in the U.S. better of the lies, but both of them absolutely committed to a genocidal war that, as I say, it's out of touch with reality. It's a policy that has completely failed, a war that is dragging the whole region, and the number of deaths, the brutality that everyone is seeing on their screens every day, they're not discussing that. They're not discussing anything real that is happening in the world today, nor do they have any solutions for it. So I found the whole program, the whole debate, totally surreal. And I found even worse the coverage of it since then, where it's simply sticking on Biden's ability to answer questions. He sets none of the policy. And the policies for both really are set by corporate America, by their need to control the entire region, and Israel can no longer perform that role for them. Rather than face that and this total failure, they want to talk about personalities.
You're absolutely right, because the biggest winner in that debate was the Israeli lobby in the United States. They were the big winner because they're not talking about what's going on in the region. Julia, what also is interesting to come to reflect upon is how the IDF generals are calling for a ceasefire. They have lost. The IDF has lost. It has lost its, has not achieved its goals. And indirectly, Hamas has won. And that's something nobody in Western media wants to talk about. Go ahead, Julia.
Yeah, absolutely. The Zionist entity, as we can see, other than slaughtering civilians, which has been most of its activity throughout the course of this genocidal war, only has hit any kind of Hamas or Hezbollah leaders or commanders in the context of civilian targets. And this is in response to the decimation of military bases, of security infrastructure, military infrastructure, tanks, weaponry, the attack by Hezbollah in the north of occupied Palestine and Gaza have been precise, and they've been calculated, and they've followed a very controlled path of escalation that has destroyed, not only crippled, but completely destroyed the Zionist entity army, basically. So right now, you know, in response, Israel's never had a strategy. It even had said decades ago That it's only asset has been in military technology and in its air force. Now Hezbollah has effectively basically challenged and dispelled the myth of its air superiority. Now Israeli jets for the last 2-3 weeks have been turned back in response to Hezbollah's deployment of anti-aircraft missiles and through the successful striking of Israeli targets without Israel successfully intercepting them. So the whole facade of Israeli military superiority, including air superiority, has been completely shattered.
Julie, I would submit the only strategy that Israel has is to bring the United States into an escalated war. That's their only strategy.
Absolutely.
That's the end. And Lionel, you know, if I can go to you, in light of what we've already heard on this program here, and considering only 11 minutes of the debate last week covered foreign policy, and even smaller, that 11 minutes dealt with what's going on in Palestine. It would have been a wonderful opportunity for both of those candidates to explain why the United States supports a settler colonial project that would be, to use American terms, a gross form of Jim Crow. Why do the United States support that if the United States, in fact, supports a rules-based order? Lionel.
Peter, I love you, but I want you to think about what you just said. You were wondering whether Joe Biden could have perhaps explicated or expatiated the pluses and minuses of settler colonialism. They were just trying to get through this. I don't think anybody truly can understand how horrified and horrible that was. And now nobody's talking about it. Now, of course, as you know, Peter, I'm in the fishbowl. You are immersed in this. Were it not for the internets, as someone once called it, I would know nothing. Because when it comes to regular cable news and this particular sock puppet media, nobody's talking about Ukraine or anything for the matter regarding Israel. The question that we have is, who's in charge? Is it better to have the blank check signed now while we're all worried about jet lag and appearances? Or does this wreak havoc on the cause? Would Mr. Netanyahu, for example, want to stand next to Mr. Biden? And therefore, could somebody suggest that this plan must further be muddled and ill-advised because this man is agreeing to it? I mean, the calculus of this is incredible. But as far as American news goes, nobody's talking about it.
Well, I mean, Sarah, what was most horrific about that debate is that the genocide continues without comment. That's what's most disappointing and horrifying. I mean, for anyone that has any kind of moral compass whatsoever, that's what's really tragic about it. Lionel's right. You can go talk about all the optics all you want. I mean, it's just everyone's getting clicks off of it. It's really quite pathetic. And I agree with you. There's no difference between the two. Sarah.
Well, they really only want to discuss the optics, because they can't discuss what they're doing, except to say they fully support this genocidal war. And every step of the way, they know that Israel is failing. They know it better than any of us know it. They know the inside track, but they see the resignations of folks leaving, those who aren't showing up. They know it. The reservists who are just checking out, 900, I think, It's an incredible, the Israelis with dual citizenship who are leaving, they know that the ports are shut down. They know it very, very well. The actions of Yemen, they know it's changed global shipping. They know that the Iron Dome no longer really exists. Hezbollah has taken it out piece by piece by piece. And they know every single inch of it has also been charted by some very interesting Hezbollah drones that they sent to the whole world. They sent it to the whole world, the actual coordinates of all different vital Israeli technology. the entire electric grid for all of northern Israel, and how there's the exact coordinates, how they would target it. They sent a message, and it's they can't discuss any of that.
Yeah, but
none of it.
But
it was not even.
Yeah, but Julia, the message that we're getting from Israel to and it's being telegraphed to the United States is that they want to, if they since they cannot win against Hamas, they want the United States to go fight Hezbollah and Iran indirectly on their behalf. Go ahead, Julia.
This has been the goal from the beginning. Especially when we have a crazy PM like Netanyahu, with a feature of the Zionist occupation society, and in general, he's no exception. But someone just so smug and so arrogant that he believes that the prolongation of this genocidal war can basically keep him out of jail, and he has a lot of pending corruption charges, and basically he's going to be thrown in jail and go to court once this is all over. So there's very little time that he can buy left at this point. And at the same time, he always basically campaigned on being the anti-Iran guy, the one who's going to, you know, destroy Iran for Israel's security and prosperity. Of course, it looks like the resistance, the unified resistance forces are doing the opposite because of his stupidity. And what Netanyahu right now is basically still trying to buy some more time, but of course he's been unsuccessful in getting the support from the U.S. To expand into Lebanon, because the U.S. knows what Israel, which is losing in Gaza, has to come up against in Lebanon. Hezbollah is the strongest and largest non-state resistance military force in the world, has a large arsenal.
Okay, Julia, I have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on dementia and war. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing dementia and wars. Okay, let's go back to Lionel in New York. Lionel, in the first part of the program, you talked about the optics and how things are perceived and all of that, which, of course, I agree with you completely. Being in the fishbowl, I would query you on your thoughts about, because you already mentioned it, Benjamin Netanyahu most likely will be addressing a joint session of Congress. He's done this before. I think he probably would, once this is done, no other person has addressed a joint session of Congress as many times. We know the number of standing ovations will be there and all of that. But Lionel, living in the fishbowl, do you have any idea how the world will perceive that?
Oh, how the world will perceive this?
How the world. No, I know of the networks are going to be slobbering all over it, and the usual stuff. I don't even want to waste time on it. But I'm asking you, do you have any idea how the rest of the world is going to see
this? Yes. I can tell you how the rest of the world feels right now, because the rest of the world looks as though we have some form of current events dementia, that we're unable to articulate or recognize what's happening. You know, Peter, there was a time when a lot of folks would say, we cannot fight wars against terror. Terror doesn't exist. It's not in a place. It's like catching smoke with your hands. And yet, when you talk about Hamas, they think that Hamas is a place with barracks and it's garrisoned, and there's a command center, and there you go, it's a country. They have no idea. The world looks at us, I think, and realizes that we have basically abandoned everything that we said post 9/11, as though we didn't learn anything, as though we are fighting these mythical, because if there's one thing I think the world knows that we know, is that the war against terror is always pretextual. It's never for that. That is a reason for it. I'll tell you, but very, very quickly, somebody one time said the chances of us ever going into Iraq would have been zero had their main export been broccoli. And we know that. So we always realize what's the angle. So the world must be looking at us and thinking, do you have any idea what's going on? And the answer is apparently no.
Well, I mean, Lionel, we went into Iraq because that's what the Israelis wanted. At the end of the day, it wasn't about oil, okay? I wish it had been, okay? But this shows the demented foreign policy of priorities of the United States. You know, Sarah, again, you know, the diminishing soft power that the United States has. Anthony Blinken is laughed out of the region. I mean, nobody wants to talk to that fool because he's Israel's lawyer. They want to talk to, they can talk to Israel directly. Why do they need to talk to the U.S. Secretary of State? I mean, that's how diminished the reputation of the United States is. You know, you have all these liberal Arabs in the region. You know, they like Western values. They like going on vacation. Even they now, you know, abhor what the United States is doing. I mean, they've lost any kind of connection with them. Sarah.
They've lost any connection. Because U.S. policy, it's corporate policy. They must dominate the region, and yet they're unable to. That is the reality. And there's people's movements that are so powerful and have developed through coordination, but also science and technology, ways of defending themselves, even though the casualties are enormous, are horrendous, are terrible. The Israeli army, created by the U.S., armed by the U.S., funded by the U.S., is unable to do the job it was created to do. And so, yes, they do want to expand this war to Iran. Do they really think that'll go better? Expand it into Lebanon? Is that a solution? Wider war? I think the U.S., their own aircraft carriers know it, as they were reminded in Yemen with Ansarallah's missiles. So every step of the way, and as a matter of fact, the U.S. embraced, there was Israeli officials came and met at the White House, claimed they were going to head into Lebanon. They were given full support for this. And then 4 days later, General Brown said, no way are we doing that. And what happened in the meantime, what happened in the interim was Hezbollah released that little video showing exactly the coordinates. And they could see that everything is already known and that the Israeli would be a disaster. Now, it's not much different with Iran. So the idea that the U.S. can, that military can fight some war, they can tear up the whole region, that's unfortunately true. They're not going to secure their domination anymore. Those days are past, and they can't accept it. That is really what's going on at the most basic level. And so they're into complete denial, a really not only hypocrisy, but the idea of Netanyahu speaking to joint Congress, that really is to normalize and to applaud genocide. And there should be opposition every single city, town, area of the U.S. when that happens. There'll be big demonstrations in Washington, D.C. But really what I think is needed is everywhere in the country for a shut it down, a stay away, a walk out, every conceivable kind of action against this normalizing and applauding of genocide. I mean, it's up to the whole population.
Yes, but Sarah, we all know that there will be consequences for that. Taking a moral position, there is very severe moral consequences for it. Lionel has been on this journey with me.
Hundreds of thousands of people have been standing up to the.
You know, Lionel has been on this journey with me since October, and you know, Lionel is a long-term guest on this program, and we've said some pretty derisive things about the blue-haired kids on campus and all that, but what I saw over the last few months before graduation, that is, I applauded them. I mean, there is a moral compass with the younger generation, and we should all respect that. Julia, I mean,
By the way, there is a moral compass, and they were surprisingly effective, and literally, and that is what's at risk here, as is so well known, that for the younger generation, they have no care for either of these candidates, no matter how much they build them up. And they're opposing the fundamental policy. And they're doing it putting their lives, their future, their careers.
It's because of the entire political system and ethos offers them nothing. Okay, they have been robbed. Okay, of their future by these people, by the donors, and all of this. Julia, let me go back to you. You know, as Israel proceeds with its genocide in Gaza and its land grab on the West Bank, it puts itself into an existential position of to be or not to be. I mean, this is really the stakes here. And the Israelis, they believe that the United States is going to come to their rescue. Well, as Sarah has already pointed out, aircraft carriers can be sunk too. Go ahead.
Absolutely. And while all Israel seems to be able to do is wipe out, you know, massacre innocent civilians, the resistance has been attacking all of their military infrastructure, land, sea, and air, precisely. And every time Israel wants to escalate by, for example, you know, killing commanders like they did yesterday, the resistance responds through, you know, decimating their military bases and military infrastructure. And this, so far, Hezbollah has only used a fraction of its capabilities in this long-term war of attrition. And through all of this already, Israel's its military and its leadership is divided. Right now, the war cabinet is completely dissolved. There's this standoff between Gallant and Netanyahu, and you know, the war cabinet, of course. There was issues before its dissolving with the disagreements, with the lack of conduct and the lack of vision within this genocidal machine that is the Zionist entity. So right now there's a complete collapse from within, with the resistance really having an organized upper hand without even giving it all that they've got. So right. So of course there's not much time, more time that they can buy at this point, with the resistance consistently revealing new capabilities. Yep. And new equipment, and this will extend, of course, to the U.S. as well, which no longer has the security of its military, of its formerly ever-expanding military base in the Middle East, which is now crumbling from within.
Yeah, Lionel, as this brouhaha over the debate continues, I mean, it's nonstop here. But, you know, the gravity of the issues that we have already discussed on this program in a very short amount of time shows the direction of where things are going to go. And we're all left with this man in the White House? Tell me there's hope.
Well, I think there is hope, and the hope will come by virtue of, and I keep saying it, various civilian and citizen and alternative media, which is bigger than anybody can ever imagine. People in the cable news world don't understand it. That's number one. Number two, it never ceases to amaze me, Peter, that when people involve themselves in war, we never learn. Remember Colin Powell one time said, he called it the pottery barn rule. If you break it, you own it. People think that somehow they're running against that Hezbollah and Hamas. These are a bunch of ragtag, spear-chucking natives who have no sense of sophistication, and they're mobilized by hate, and they can be easily quelled by this massive military with this incredible intelligence and the use of modern warfare. And it's like, no! First of all, did anybody think this through? What was their plan? And finally, you say something very quickly about genocide, apartheid. I keep telling people, and we have to remind people, genocide, in the words apartheid and ethnic cleansing, these are not pejoratives. These are statutory definitions that are clearly enunciated, clearly prescribed, and clearly indicate what is going on now. People still think, Peter, that the word genocide is being mean, or they conjure up something about World War II, which it was, or cattle cars and the Holocaust. Yes, that's a part of it. But you don't necessarily have to go there for you to meet all of the criteria. And I wish the international courts would pick up their action a little bit, too.
But don't you think also it doesn't have the same kind of punch because the people that are being genocided now are brown people? I mean, it's built-in racism as well, okay? It's genocide with people that we can identify with. But if we can't identify with them, well, that's just okay.
Well, the chance of this happening in Sweden, I think, are next to none. And we've always understood this. We saw this during World War II. We had a real hard time with the Germans because they looked like us, and the Italians, they looked like us, but no problem with the Japanese. That was different. They weren't human. And it goes back, it's tribal, no matter how
well,
you look at it.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, genocide is a modern term, but consider who's been committing genocides against other people. A lot of it happened in Europe, and it's now European settlers in Palestine are doing exactly the same thing. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Jersey City, New York, and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.